Welcome to Listen to Older Voices, a program produced for Uniting Melba and podcast through the Toorak Times. It's always a pleasure to bring you, through their stories, the life and times of older people in our community. All very interesting, all very different, and all very entertaining. This is a special Baby Boomers edition. Greetings and welcome to a new program in the ongoing and award-winning series of Listen to Older Voices. I'm Rob Greaves and I speak with Kath Holton over a two-program series about her life and times. Kath, who was born in 1955, was brought up in the then semi-rural and outer Melbourne suburb of Rosanna. Underdeveloped at this time, it meant that she and the neighbourhood kids had vast open spaces to play in, all of which led to a happy and healthy childhood. Coming from a very politically and union-oriented family meant Kath was exposed to politics at a young age. And, far from finding it boring, she absorbed it all. However, this did mean she often felt a little isolated, as it wasn't a topic of discussion, let alone interest, with her young friends. The development of a political and social conscience reared its head in the classroom when the class, believing that they were being unfairly dealt with by a teacher, agreed that Kath would put their position to the teacher and they would support her. However, when the time came and Kath spoke up, she quickly realised that in fact she was on her own. Kath graduated from Teachers College and after working off her debt, she and a girlfriend decided to go on an overseas holiday. In the belief that the closest country must be the cheapest, they found themselves in New Guinea in the early 1970s, when that country really wasn't set up for tourism. This didn't stop them having a wonderful and eye-opening experience, and it really set Kath off on many years of travel overseas. In fact, on her return to Australia, she took up relief teaching before heading off on a significant overseas trip filled with wonder and a fair share of scary moments, including having rocks thrown at her in Iran and being in a bus crash in Pakistan. But let's start at the beginning. Here I am, talking with Kath Holton. Kath, first of all, thank you very much for inviting me into your home. Could I start by asking you, when were you born and whereabouts were you born?
Oh, well, it's welcome. It's lovely to have you here after so many years.
Thank you.
But I was born at the Queen Victoria Hospital for Women. I think it was the Queen Vic, which has since been pulled down. But I did get confused once when I filled out my passport application because my mother's family hails from Williamstown and I wrote down that I was born in Williamstown. So now that's on my passport. And, of course, I was never born there. I just lost the plot for a minute.
Oh, you're one of those people that totally confuses the bureaucracy. You know that. Well, talking about being born, what would be your earliest memories?
The earliest thing I can remember is moving into the house in Rosanna. My parents lived with my mother's mother in Williamstown, where my eldest brother John was born. And I would have been I was a baby in arms. I must have been a toddler of some sort because I can remember my father carrying me into the new house. I was in his arm and I can still see the way the lounge room was organised, the little cabinet in the corner, the blind on the window with no curtains on it yet, and a few other little bits and pieces of furniture. So I reckon I would have been 6 to 1 year old, something like that.
6 months to 1 year old. Yeah. That's not a bad memory for that age.
Yeah, I know. That was a very clear flash. So if I've been carried in, I must have been fairly tiny.
So being Rosanna, would that have been a new build?
Yes, we were pretty much the first house in the street and Rosanna was like the edge of the wilderness, you know. It was just paddocks and bush from there on.
Would have been great for a kid though.
Oh, we loved it as children. We had a gang of us that roamed the countryside and went to Devil's Canyon, you know.
And there were no concerns, were there, then, for letting the kids go out and do those things?
No, we had billy carts up and down the road and the whole street used to play with each other and come out. And the road wasn't made then, but when they did make the road, the billy carts went from those round pram wheels to ball bearing wheels.
Wow, they really flew then. What about school? What were your primary school experiences like?
Rosanna Golf Links. We used to walk up there. Gee, I had friends with all the kids in the class and we played all those games that you play. But I did feel a little isolated as a child. I did feel a little bit different because my father was a union man. And so we had a very political household and I was very aware of political issues. And I would have been the only one in primary school that had an opinion on the Vietnam War. And it was all in the early and mid-60s, late 60s. So everything that was happening around the world, you know, the civil rights movements in America, rights for women, everything was bubbling up, you know. And Dad used to be... You know, we're all very aware of Reds Under the Bread because there was a lot of, you know, the American were having all those trials against yes. the communist supporters and, you know, lots of actors and actresses.
The McCarthyism.
Exactly, right. So I did always feel a little bit on the outer.
Because it wasn't the kind of thing most of the kids you, well, any of the kids you were hanging out with would want to talk about.
No.
No, and they, no. And the parents they didn't talk to
go
kids.
In, they didn't go into the annual May Day March.
No. Well, what about then when you moved into secondary school? Did that passion or that interest in politics follow you? Or
yes, it did. And I still think I was shy and withdrawn, but I had my group of friends. And that's, you know, a great base when you're a young teenager, that you need that friendship with other people to feel okay. But I would sometimes be the only one in class that stood up against the teacher. And I can remember once, I think it was a maths teacher, and she said we would have to do a test if we didn't do something, and we all did it. And then she said, now you have to do the test anyway. So the class had this discussion that we were going to refuse, you know, and I was the spokesperson to stand up and say to the teacher, we've all come together and said no. And I turned around and every head was staring at their desk.
Who's isolated? Oh, dear.
So she just laughed at me and told me to sit down, you know. So I shrank into my seat.
Were they good years at high school?
Yes,
did you enjoy them?
I think
them?
So, yeah.
What definitely. About your scholastic side? Were you good at school?
Oh, average, a little bit above. Just your normal student.
Did you have any subjects? Really engrossed? Anything that
I loved geography. Loved geography. I loved the lay of the land and how the world is formed and where things are and all of that, and I love art, I loved art, still love art, and writing, English, I loved English, but I hated maths, and I still can't count.
Were you forming any ideas during that time of your life of what you would like to be?
No idea. No, I did dream of being a movie star. And I knew a lot of people went to university and I sort of thought I would go there, but I was really scared of uni. I thought I'd just be swamped by all these cool people and overwhelmed by it. So I went to teachers' college, which seemed a compromise, but not that I ever really wanted to be a teacher. It was just expected that I didn't finish school at, you know, matriculation, that there would be something to go on to. And I didn't want to be a nurse, so...
So did you see Teachers College through to the end?
Yeah.
And graduated?
Yes.
And became a teacher?
College, yes. I was a primary school teacher.
Whereabouts?
Oh, where was my first posting? Oh, Yolambie Primary School, which is up near Lower Plenty.
Right.
Behind the Watsonia Army Camp, up in
All
there.
Right, okay.
And then after 3 years, because I had to work off my... scholarship.
Mm-hmm.
My girlfriend and I, Lynn, we both resigned. Oh, no, we didn't. We went on an overseas holiday. We'd made enough money to go overseas. So we had this big plan to go somewhere and we figured, well, the closest place to Australia has to be the cheapest. So we booked flights to New Guinea and went there for the school holidays.
That wouldn't be most young girls' first choice of a place for a holiday.
Well, we literally just thought it can't be very expensive because it's the shortest flight.
Right. And this is Listen to Older Voices, Ageless Stories on Ageless Radio. I'm Rob Grooves and I'm talking with Kath Holton, and Kath is recalling her early years, including those years as she became a teacher. So you would have been in your early 20s?
Yeah.
You got to New Guinea. What did you think?
Oh, it was like stepping back in time. It was like we were treated almost like royalty, you know? We'd walk into villages because it was... There was not a great deal of development there. No. They'd only just got their independence, and you'd meet women with little babies and they'd call their little tiny girl Independence, you know? And there was the Rascal Boys, and they occupied a lot of the Port Moresby and the big towns, and they were very dangerous. So people were always warning us about the Rascal Boys. But basically everywhere we went, people feted us, carried our bags for us, gave up their homes for us, moved out so we could move in for two nights. And, you know, we walked along the beach and we'd be met by the whole village would come out to meet us. And we only had little backpacks on, but they'd carry our bags. And then after walking for two or three or four hours, there'd be another massive group of people. It was the next village that had come out to meet us, and there was this handover. And we'd be passed on to the next village people. And they'd run up coconut palms and slash coconuts and run up and just slash the top off them and drinking out of these coconuts freshly picked. And it was quite an amazing adventure.
It sounds like it was quite a life-changing moment for you then.
Oh, I don't think it was life-changing. We felt absolutely humbled and embarrassed by most of the attention that we got. We didn't feel like we deserved it, and we always felt like we had to give more, so we were constantly going through our packs and giving away things like shampoo and conditioner because we had nothing else to offer except cigarettes. We were smokers and we'd offer cigarettes and the whole packet, everyone would just take two or three or four or five and your packet would be empty.
Yes.
So we were constantly buying cigarettes to hand out. But people loved that.
Because it wouldn't have been a place that, what were we, the early 70s are we talking
about? Yeah.
It wouldn't have been a place that most Australians would have chosen to visit at that stage.
Yeah.
It's still fairly unknown to most Australians in the 70s. Mm. How long did you stay for?
5 weeks, the school holidays,
right.
Which was used to be 6 weeks. So, you know.
So, okay, you've gone over there, you've seen quite a different lifestyle. You come back to Australia, you don't take up teaching again, by the sound of it.
I did take up teaching again. I get a bit fuzzy about the chronological law. But I did teach again.
Primary school?
Yes, I did. Taught in primary schools, and I became an emergency teacher for quite a long time, and taught in a lot of different schools all out through the eastern suburbs and further out, you know, like Whittlesea, Kinglake, Kinglake West, places like that.
Did you find it rewarding?
Not really. I didn't like emergency teaching. I found other staff members never really accepted you, and you were always the odd bod in the in the staff room, and you'd picked up the wrong cup or you'd sat in the wrong chair or... But I loved kids. I loved interacting with the children.
So why didn't you apply for a more permanent position?
I don't really recall, because then I did go overseas again and travelled for 2 years.
On your own?
Yes.
Where to?
Oh, I did a big trip. I caught a train with a friend to Adelaide and caught a bus up to Darwin.
Oh, that would have been an adventure.
And then walked across the tarmac up onto the plane and flew out of Australia.
From Darwin?
Yeah. So that was a pretty good adventure.
Well, that alone is an adventure. The bus trip up there must have been interesting.
That was about 3 days on a bus, I think, yeah.
Dusty?
Dusty, barren, hot. I loved it.
Yeah, I can see that. So you jump on this plane. Where does it take you to?
Well, I went to Thailand and I was going to meet up with a boy I'd met in Greece, but I knew that was going to be fraught because we hadn't really left on good terms and he'd gone before me. But I met a wonderful woman on the plane. I sat next to this woman. She must have been in her 70s or more, and her name was Van, V-A-N. That was her whole name. She'd changed it by Depol. And all she did was travel the world, meet young men. And she lived somewhere up along the Gold Coast and was constantly having visitors back to her of all these people she'd meet overseas.
Fantastic.
So she was amazing. So we went hang gliding together.
Wow.
On the beach, on Pattaya Beach in Thailand. She's up there hanging off a parachute, you know, being pulled along behind a speedboat. So I had my turn as well. So she really opened up my eyes, just that flight, just meeting her, just suddenly went, whoa, you can do anything, you know. There's no holes barred, you know. You can be whoever you want to be. You can create yourself, you know.
Are we still in the 70s here?
Yeah, that must have been the very late 70s because I had my first child in 82. And that was about 12 months after I'd come home.
I just wondered, given that the Vietnam War didn't really finish until the early to mid-70s, was there any hangovers in Asia at that stage from that, or was it like...
Well, I only went to Thailand and I didn't find any. Nothing. No one was talking about Vietnam by then.
Mm.
That was like a thing of the past, really, that had all got... I was going to say resolved, but it's, you know, the war finished
yes.
I suppose.
Yes.
And then there are repercussions when people came home. But as far as my recollection of that, it wasn't a big influence. People weren't talking about it then.
Right.
But I did come home through Iran, and they just had the... remember when those Americans were... taken hostage.
Oh, the Marines, I think they were,
no,
or something.
No, it was the consulate staff or something,
okay.
Wasn't it?
Was it? But I do remember the incident, yes.
Yeah, and that was, had just finished when we came
home. I think they made a movie about
there.
That, in fact.
Yeah.
So, okay, well, was Iran a bit of a hotbed then?
We were scared there. I was travelling with a girlfriend and another bloke we'd met, and we were on buses and people with Kalashnikovs, like the army, would come on with their guns and you had to surrender your passport and then get it back. And we were on a bus trip from Istanbul to Delhi and so driving through Iran. So we only did one brief stopover in Tehran, but people threw stones at us there. And we got hit by stones.
Were they assuming because of your colour you were Americans?
Well, we were white and we weren't wearing scarves. So I think we did actually buy scarves and put them over our head because we thought we don't want to stand out.
No. Did it make a difference doing that?
We just kept quiet and kept low and just stayed on the bus. And when we did this walk through Tehran, we were there for about 2 hours while something happened with the bus. And... yeah, someone threw stones at us.
Wow.
Someone else also chased us down the street and we ran away, offering to smoke marijuana with us. And we had someone throwing stones at us and this little guy in a little vest with black hair and a beard. No, no, you can smoke with me. I won't harm you.
Oh, gosh. Oh, yeah, right.
And Carl and I just took off, ran back to the bus station, you know.
So going through Iran was more a necessity than a desire, was it?
Absolutely. It was just on the route. We were happy to just get out of there.
Was this the same journey, the Thailand journey? Or was this
is at the end of it. So
you went from
Thailand to Greece.
Right.
And met up with my friend there and then spent about just on 2 years travelling through Europe, working in Switzerland, visiting family up in Liverpool, met my cousins up in Liverpool. My dad was a Liverpudlian.
Yeah. Was that your first time in England?
Yes, my first trip.
How did you find that? Was it like going home, or was it like visiting a strange country?
Yes.
Right.
There was elements in England of feeling like you're at home, like being in London and seeing the names off the Monopoly board.
Was
fantastic.
Yes, of course.
And watching the changing of the guards at Buckingham Palace. These were things that I never thought I'd do. But going up to Liverpool, I'd never felt really comfortable with the family, and they were all very different. But I went and visited them and stayed for a couple of days. And
did they take you around Liverpool?
Not so much. They took me on a driving trip to the Lakes District and then down into Wales, which was lovely. But my cousin and his wife argued the whole time,
driving
in the front seat, about his driving. So I just sat
That was an enjoyable journey.
And through the countryside in England, there's so many hedges on the side of the road or stone walls. You can't see the countryside. You're in this tunnel with two people arguing in the front, me sitting meekly in the back.
And a lot of those country roads are very narrow as well, so you never know what's coming the other way till it comes. So their attention span wouldn't have been all that great arguing.
Yes.
It's funny the things you remember, isn't it? It's usually the things that give you terror as well as pleasure.
Exactly.
So, okay, you do London and then you go to Iran, do you?
No, then I went to Switzerland and got a job for 6 months up in a ski resort.
Oh, that would have been eye-opening, wouldn't
it? Which was fantastic. That was great fun. The social life in that town, because all the hotel staff, well, 70, 80% of them, just come in for the season, and they're often overseas travellers, or they're people who've come up from the Ukraine or Czechoslovakia to work for the season. And they bring their family and then they go back home. So during summer, the town's empty, but during winter, it's full of young people.
So it's almost like a bit of a paradise for a young woman.
We'd work during the day and then hit the hotel scenes at night.
Right.
All the bands that were playing and the bars that were open. And
were you skiing?
No, once. I went skiing once. But we did perfect our script for saying that we'd been out on the Peets, and the moguls were very bad today.
And then we're from Switzerland.
Where did I go from Switzerland? Then I went back down to Greece and caught the bus back over through Tehran, Pakistan.
Wow, that's quite a journey.
And to India. And then I got to India with a girlfriend. Then I had to ring mum and dad because I had no money left and I was sick. Yeah. I got sick in India. And I remember dad said to me when I left, don't you ever ring and ask us to send you money. And, 24 months later, I'm calling, please bring me home.
I think 2 years was a pretty good stint. I was quite amazed that you must have been working fairly hard at times to allow yourself to be able to travel like that.
Yeah. Yeah. I worked in a pub in Dublin for a couple of months, the Rathgar Hotel, and worked in Switzerland. So they were the only two jobs I had.
And they were enough to keep you sustained during that time.
Yeah, because when I left Australia, I had $200.
That's nothing.
I know. I was so naive and stupid, What did I think I could do?
But you did it.
But I did it. Staying in youth hostels, walking everywhere, taking local buses.
And except for that incident in Iran, it sounds like it was a fairly safe journey.
It was, although we had another incident on the bus through Pakistan.
Oh, other people said Pakistan's a bit...
Well, no, this was just an accident that happened. We were driving through the desert in a bus that was filled with people and women and children and chickens and goats. And on the top of the bus was 1 ton of illegal sugar, which had been loaded on at the border, and all the men were up the top. So we, Mark Carmel and I, my girlfriend, we wanted to ride on the top with all the men. So we did that, and we drove through the desert, and it was very magical. And then the sun set and the moon came out and all these men were singing us songs. Wow. And asking us to sing Australian songs. We didn't know any. Advanced Australia Fair, you know,
that was hardly appropriate.
I'm trying to remember, I love a sunburnt country, you know. Then the driver stopped and insisted that we came back down into the main party. He didn't want us to sleep up there with all the men.
Okay.
And the next morning we woke up still on the road, which is a long, narrow concrete road with only the width of the vehicle. And you would see another car coming towards you from miles away and both would have to pull over. Well, this car came towards us. It didn't pull over. So the bus driver went off to the side of the road and his wheel mm-hmm. went down a culvert.
Oh, dear.
So the bus just rolled.
Oh, God.
In slow motion. And we just stood up and spread eagle and put our hands out and just rolled with the bus, everyone. Chickens and goats and women and children and all the men on the top jumped off.
Wow.
So there was one person hurt, but everybody else got out okay. But the bus was on its roof. And my girlfriend, Carmel, had been wearing pink overalls and all the battery acid had spilt on them.
Oh, Lord.
So they were started to disintegrate. So she had to take them off and just wrap herself in a sarong.
Yeah.
And the men were very concerned that she had to cover up. She must cover up. You must put this on. You must put this on. They were so embarrassed and they didn't want to look.
Wow.
Do join Kath and I next week for the conclusion of a story where we get to share more of her overseas adventures, learn how she met her husband-to-be and how they built their home out of mud bricks. We also learn how she made the transition of working with children to older people. Next week, Kath Holton on Listen to Older Voices. Listen to Older Voices is produced by Rob Greaves at the Melbourne Community Support Program on behalf of Wesley Mission Victoria. The program is supported by financial assistance from the Commonwealth Government through the Commonwealth Home Support Program and is brought to you through the Toorak Times.